Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I be spiked out. I could trip a referee. Tell by my attitude that I most definitely leave from.
I'm Marty Goldenson, in for Brian Lehrer. Are you a transplant to New York? More than half of all New Yorkers have moved here from somewhere else, according to the new book, My First New York, Early Adventures in the Big City. Susan Bartsch, featured in the book, came here in 1981, and she says, I came to New York for love. Doesn't everybody? Listeners, you want to get in on this segment before me as we move forward on it, so tell us what you brought to the Big Apple, and what brought you here? Was it love, work, something else? Give us a call at 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. Or post a comment at WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show. Or post something on our Facebook page. Joining me in the studio now to share more First New York adventures is the editor of My First New York, New York Magazine senior editor, David Haskell.
Hi.
Welcome.
Thank you very much.
Joining us a little later will be Andre Osserman, professor at CUNY and author of the memoir Out of Egypt, as well as Nate Silver, the political analyst and a very recent New York transplant. Both Andre and Nate are featured in the book My First New York. So, where did this idea come from, and how did it sort of evolve into a book from what was a cover story a while ago, right?
That's right. It started as a cover story in the magazine a year ago. And it just got an enormous amount of reception. The day it came out, we got a call from an editor at HarperCollins who suggested we turn it into a book, and spent the last year doing so. You know, the idea behind the project was to take a moment when the city had gone through a pretty miserable winter, weather-wise and economy-wise, and just remind ourselves and our readers that As you mentioned, more than half of us have moved here from somewhere else. And there's not many places in the world that can claim that. And certainly, I would argue, not any that attract people just for the lure of the city itself. And so we thought we would approach some New Yorkers who we admired and who seemed...
And who can write.
Well, and who can write, who can remember, who can recollect the city that they arrived into. And, you know, these are people who are, in our minds, quintessential New Yorkers. But, of course, when they first got here, they felt anything but, in most cases. And, you know, we were really excited about their enthusiasm. You know, sometimes when sometimes it's difficult to get notable people to talk about personal lives. But when you approach them about conjuring the city that they first landed into, all of a sudden they kind of
opened up,
exactly.
Yeah, and we found that with our listeners. You know, we asked our listeners to tell us why, you know, they moved to New York and when they became real New Yorkers. And, you know, they gave us wonderful answers. One person from Morningside Heights wrote, I moved here from Chicago for a girl. She dumped me 5 days after I arrived on Thanksgiving Day. I learned that loneliness is crying by yourself on the A train. No one will ever look at you. A gold mine. Yeah, so you got some favorites?
Well, sure. I mean, one thing that comes to mind is the book is arranged chronologically. It starts in 1933 with David Dinkins and moves up to 2009, Nate Silver being one of our 2009 contributors. And, you know, the city seems so exciting to be in basically any decade, you know, and so...
Well, Nate's on the line, I think.
Yeah, I think we'll be talking to Nate soon.
Let's bring him in now.
Sure.
Nate Silver, political analyst.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Hi, hey,
you,
Nate.
Here, talk to your editor. Ask him. Talk to him directly. Ask him what you asked him.
Well, we approached Nate, and we knew that he had moved here in 2009. We thought he'd be a great bookend to the book. And also, he has a very analytical mind, so we asked him not only about what it felt like to move to New York, but how he made that decision to move here. Nate, you want to talk about that a little bit?
Well, the joke I had is that during the election campaign in 2008, when I was covering the election, I made a lot of contacts in New York and was traveling here a lot anyway, and at some point I realized I had more New York area codes in my cell phone than Chicago area codes where I was before. So at that point it made sense to, you know, I was practically living here already, right, because your cell phone is your life, kind of. So why not go ahead and make the move?
Right.
It was the tipping point.
Definitely.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the marks, and people always have different marks about when they consider themselves New Yorkers. Lenny Lopate's brother, the poet, Philip, you know, wrote that wonderful line that goes something like this. What binds New Yorkers together as a people is that they're all looking for a better job, a better apartment, and a better lover. So what else did you find? Were the sort of turning points for people?
Oh, well, you know, I think in some cases they felt from the moment they stepped out of the plane that they were New Yorkers. Naomi Campbell has a funny short piece in which it begins at age 16. I was summoned by Anna Wintour for a photo shoot on the Concorde. And so she landed here, and of course the only part of New York that she knew had been the Warriors, the movie that she had seen. So she has to be, you know, taken immediately to the subway. But she had no angst about all of a sudden becoming a New Yorker. I think, you know, many others, you know, arrived. Graydon Carter has a great contribution. Graydon Carter has a great contribution about arriving here to take a job at Time Inc. And he's very honest about the insecurity that came with suddenly entering the New York media world. He found a cheap hotel that offered a student rate, but of course he wasn't a student, so he had to check out and then change into his work clothes at work itself. And you know, I think that kind of anxiety and wondering when am I actually going to fit in is something that comes out of many of the contributions in the book.
Yeah, Nate, do you have memories like that, or when you first felt really here, or that you fit in, or do you have some powerful early visual memories of New York?
You know, I've spent a lot of time here over the past couple of years. My sister lived here for a while, but I think actually for me it was ironically when it stopped feeling special in a way, ironically, right? Where, you know, I remember one night, maybe, you know, 8 weeks after my move, I was just kind of wandering around Times Square late at night. I'd gotten dinner up in Hell's Kitchen. I was like, I'm kind of sick of all the tourists, you know, and it's a little bit rainy out. I was kind of feeling kind of complainy about it, right? And that was when I knew I kind of fit in, not because New Yorkers like to complain, but where it's like, okay, here's where I live now. It feels ordinary, and that's good. But at the same time, you do have those nights more in this city, I think, than any other way. You're reminded of, you know, how vibrant the city can be. Sometimes walking between meetings, you know, in Midtown when the sun hits you the right way, or, you know, sometimes in the West Village. Or so you have those kind of moments, too, where you're like, wow, you know, I'm living in a really terrific place. But I think when it does start to feel like home, sometimes is when, you know, it stops amazing you on a kind of continual basis, I suppose.
Nate Silver, thanks for chiming in. We're going to move on. And thanks for calling. We do have a caller who I don't know, named Andre from Queens, who came here from India 40 years ago, is it? Is that right?
Are you talking to me?
Oh, yes, indeed.
Oh, no, I'm from Italy, actually.
Oh, no, a different. I think we have a different, forgive me, but from there, we have two Andres on hold, which is a rare coincidence in New York. but Andre from Queens. Hang in there, Andre Osserman, all right?
Well, I'm on it.
Yes, tell us about...
I can hear you.
Yes, tell us about your rainy day arrival.
My rainy day arrival, end of March 1970, coming from India. I was not prepared for the weather, I have to tell you that. Arrived at Kennedy Airport. It was, you know, I wanted to see the skyscrapers, the city, and it was all hidden in fog. Taxi drivers driving me to Manhattan. And I fell asleep exhausted because the trip had been so long. And when I woke up, there was snow all over the city, and it was gorgeous, it was beautiful and frightening. I was wearing sandals and a little shirt.
Had you ever had you seen snow? Had you been a traveler?
Oh yes, no. I'm from France. I came from India to United States, but I am from France.
Ah.
Mountain. The snow was not something that.
But you did.
New to me, but finding snow in April or end of March, April.
Yes, and waking up to it. What a shock.
Yeah, what a shock and what a beauty.
Mm.
I fell in love with New York, and 40 years later, I'm still there. I was supposed to be there for 90 days.
You're wonderful to call in. Thank you for sharing that. Now I think we should move to Andre Osserman. Those of you who don't know Andre, he's a professor at CUNY and author of the memoir Out of Egypt. Andre, what's your contribution to this request that New York Magazine made of you?
Oh, they basically wanted to know what my first impression of New York was. And for me, it was as soon as I arrived the next day, I had to go looking for a job. So I had to learn the subway system in a matter of minutes. Got lost the first time I took it, so I had to back at a couple of stations. Got terribly scared, went to my first interview, was totally rejected because I had to be a mail boy. And what did I know about mail boys and the mail in the city? But the second job as a mail boy, I kind of figured what the interview was going to be like. I fudged a bit, and I got a job at Lincoln Center.
What was that job?
It was to be a mail boy. I had to deliver mail from one building to another within the whole Lincoln Center complex. For me, it was fascinating because I got to meet Lenny Bernstein and sort of listen to his rehearsals on my errands as a mail boy.
This is the right job to be a mail person, I think. It moves you around the city and it gets you to meet important people, albeit that you're just delivering their mail. Didn't the same thing, David Haskell, happen to Nora Ephron from your previous edition? Didn't she? If I remember reading her piece.
That's right. Nora was a mail girl at Newsweek. She worked for the editor, so she was his personal
Elliot Osborne?
That's right.
Osborne Elliot, I mean.
Right. And she talks in her contribution about how when she went to the employment agency and said she wanted to, they said, would you like to work in Newsweek? She said, sure. She said she'd like to be a writer. The people at Newsweek said, women aren't writers at Newsweek. And so, and she talks about how there wasn't even an opportunity or a culture to question
that. Yeah, she didn't challenge it because
right,
she'd
exactly.
never heard of it. Yeah,
exactly.
That was wonderful. That was in the first edition of this.
Last year, we ran a cover feature on this. This past week, we ran some excerpts in the magazine of some of the newer contributions. So Nora Ephron was one of those.
Andre, don't hang up.
Okay.
I want you to listen to Bob in Queens. Bob?
Yes, Marty, always good to hear you on the radio.
Thanks.
I'm curious, to what extent is this book and the articles devoted to the Graydon Carters and the Nora Ephrons, rather than the outer borough immigrant experience, which is much harsher and much more difficult, than the professor you just spoke to?
This is a good question, and one of social justice hanging beneath it.
Sure. We spent a long time trying to assemble a list of New Yorkers who were, on the one hand, recognizable, and on the other hand, had a diversity of experiences here. But we made one exception. And so stories. Daniel Libeskind arrives in the Bronx. Gary Steingart arrives in Queens. The outer boroughs are reflected throughout the book. We did make one exception, though, on the notable New Yorker. We invited for our last contribution a writer that no one has heard of so far, I would venture to say. She arrived just a few weeks before the book went to press. We put an open call out to our readers to invite one of New York's newest members to talk about the experience. She arrived from Texas and is an aspiring actress, and she talks about the somewhat harrowing but also exciting few weeks of trying to get an acting job and trying to land a waiting job in the meantime and the difficulty but also the excitement about doing that.
Well, WNYC fills in also if you think it's too heavy there, Bob, on the celebrity culture. Here, Kate from Facebook says, I knew I was a real New Yorker when I remained unfazed by rats cavorting on subway tracks.
That actually reminds me of one of my favorite contributions is by Andy Samberg from Saturday Night Live. He was here living with three friends, some of whom are at NYU and some of them recently graduated. They found a two-bedroom apartment on McDougal Street and put up enough curtains for four young men to live there. They had a terrible rat problem, and he says that you know, it's interesting how much you can adapt when you don't have the means to fix it. We did get the sticky traps once, but once one got stuck, we were all too scared to get it and throw it out or kill it. Literally, we were four college-age dudes curled up on the couch listening to it scream for 3 days. We took turns going back and peeking at it and yelling, "Oh my God, it's there, it's dying, what did we do?" But you can't get it off. If you pull it off, you rip the limbs off. The humane thing would have been to smash it with a hammer, but no one had the stomach to do that, so it was pretty awful.
Thanks for calling in. Andre Osserman, thank you for calling in.
Thank you.
Let's see. We want to look around, see who else is calling. Oh, Inga's calling from the Bronx. From East Germany?
Yes.
Tell me your story.
I came from Germany. I was supposed to be a governess for 1 year for a family in Long Island. And I spoke no English. I had grown up in East Germany, spoke Russian. And Russian and German, of course. And I arrived by boat at New York Harbor, 42nd Street, I think, 43rd or something. And the person who was supposed to pick me up, I didn't know anybody, and I didn't know him, was late. So I was the only one left there standing with a suitcase. All the other people disappeared. And it was horrible, and I was in tears until somebody finally came and said, "You must be Inga Lind. You must be Inga." And it's a traumatic experience that I never forget.
Yes, but then again, 47 years later, you're still here.
I'm still here. I do have an accent because I was in my early 20s, and that's when you usually don't lose your accent.
Inga, thanks for calling in. So, we have just a couple minutes left, and we're talking with David Haskell about this New York Magazine book, First New York. What have you learned from all of this? You've we have 1 minute. You've edited so many stories. What have you learned that's new about our city and and people's love for it?
Well, I think one thing about the book, beyond reminding you why you moved here yourself, it gives you some historical perspective. And
the book was stories from 1933,
33 to 2009.
Right.
So over the course of that period of time, the city has been rich, the city has been poor, it's been safe, it's been dangerous, it's been safe again, it's been dangerous in a different way. And, you know, I think everyone who lives here has the sense that the city's best times were just a year or two before they got there. And really can't be true. So many of the contributors are so good at conjuring up their vision of the city. You see that it was pretty attractive at any period of time.
Wonderful. David Haskell, thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you very much.
I'm Marty Goldenson. I've been sitting in for Brian Lehrer. Tomorrow, perhaps, we will have time to read all the credits and thank everybody for putting together this show. Talk to you tomorrow.